Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast, a podcast for people who want to learn more about their personal finances and get the most from their money. This series is hosted by Kate Campbell from How To Money and Owen Raskovich from Rask Finance.
The Australian Finance Podcast is provided for educational purposes only. The information is general in nature and does not take into account your needs, goals, or objectives. What that means is the information does not apply to you specifically. So consider getting the advice of a licensed and trusted professional before acting on the information.
Hi, Owen, and welcome back to the Australian Finance Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kate. What are we talking about today?
Today, we're talking about something that's really important and doesn't have to necessarily mean a lot of money, investing in yourself.
Ooh, okay. This sounds interesting.
Yes.
Investing in yourself. So is this like take $1 out of your pocket, put it in your other pocket, or a little bit different?
A little bit different. Okay. It might mean taking an hour out of your day to actually learn something or read something that's going to grow your skill set. It doesn't have to be a financial transaction. It can just be a time transaction. So you're actually paying yourself with time.
Cool. So like you're saying, listen to this podcast at least once a week.
Yes. Well, okay. This is a form of investing in yourself.
Yes, it is indeed. I like it. I think podcasts are a great way to learn.
And we both love using podcasts to learn, and that's a free way to invest in yourself.
There's plenty of great podcasts out there. Okay, so let's just back it up a bit. What is investing in yourself and how does it work? Like why would someone consider doing it?
I think often we leave school, we leave uni with a set skill set, and they've given us some skills, but they haven't given us everything. We've got a few tools in our toolbox. That seems kind of lame, but but you've got to actually develop more skills and then actually turn the current skills you have into more valuable skills. So if you want to progress throughout your career, you're going to be learning things on the job, but to actually progress faster, to get that next pay rise, to change career directions, you're actually going to have to put in some work on the side. Whether that be an hour or a day or doing a course or something like that to keep upskilling yourself and becoming a more valuable employee and being able to do more things.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to frame it, like in terms of a career progression. There's table stakes, so like things, if you want to become you want to get into a certain role in a certain industry, there's requirements, and you always see them on like the job ads, don't you? There's what you need, and then there's like the nice to haves.
Yeah, the desirable attributes.
Yeah, and that can be most of the time that's formal study or experience. So you kind of have to tick that box, but it doesn't have to stop there. It doesn't have to stop at school or university either. So we'll get to some ways that people can, I suppose, invest in themselves without forking out a lot of money to go into an expensive course. So I think the key point here, for me at least, is that your knowledge snowballs and it compounds just as quick. And we talk about compounding a lot in terms of finances and not noticing it until it's already so big that it's compounding away in the background. The same thing with knowledge, right? As you get older, it does become harder to learn and retain things. Some people might disagree with that, but it's definitely easier to learn when you're younger. And my argument for that is there's a reason we study at the beginning of our lives and not at the end of it.
Yeah.
And the reason we study at the beginning is because we learn all these core, these core ideas about how the world works. And then as we get older and get experience, we can fill in the gaps and we can build upon that. So like basics, like maths and that sort of stuff. If you didn't learn that until you're 70, you'd find it very tough. So the idea is that you get this core body of knowledge and then you work on it over time.
And you choose the direction you want to build it in.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, it's, you said it, an hour a day. So there doesn't have to be like a, sit down with your, put on your reading glasses and read a really dense book. It can be just listen to a podcast. It could be while you're in the car, while you're on the train, something like that. It could be reading a book. It could be reading, a magazine for your industry, whatever it might be. It's just about recognizing that you are the most important customer.
Yeah.
And, at the end of the day, you could work an extra hour, get $20, get $50, whatever you're on. But at the end of the day, does that help you in 5 or 10 years from today? Probably not as much as the hour you put aside.
And I think so often we get caught up in spending time at work, spending time with family and friends and everything, and we don't actually spend any time investing in ourselves and our future. And it's, yeah, it's just as simple as that hour a day, or going off and going to that meetup group and meeting some people in a different field and learning from them. That's quite a popular way. Or going to the library and getting a few books on different topics that you would never think about reading otherwise. So it's just, it's so easy nowadays. I think even with the internet, there's so many online courses, and it doesn't mean a $2,000 uni subject. Like Udemy, Khan Academy, Skillshare, they all have really cheap $20, $30. You can learn from someone who's an expert in whatever their area is, whether that's bread making, playing the ukulele, or Pythagoras' theorem. It's all on there, and you can actually learn from people's experiences and grow. And it doesn't have to be the area that you're working on in your career. So you might be a data scientist and you're going to learn psychology in the evenings, so you can improve the picture you can paint with the numbers. So that's one I've seen with a colleague of mine recently. But I think it doesn't, the skill you're putting effort into doesn't necessarily have to be related to your career. You might be trying to improve in music and you're in law, just anything like that. It's just growing your ability to learn and developing your skill sets. Another thing also is a side hustle that's sort of become overdone recently, the whole everyone's writing about them, but just doing something on the side, even if you don't end up making any money, you learn a lot of skills from actually putting something together, whether it be how to sell a product or how to write copy or how to getting and talking to people in your community and things like that. And even volunteering, you learn a lot of skills as well. So if you're doing, whether it be an online course or you're actually getting out and doing something in your community, you're just building those skill sets and you might not even realize.
You mentioned Khan Academy just before. That's a free resource online, and you can get it on YouTube or you can go to their website. And I use that website when I was studying postgraduate business analytics. And it's I found that the free courses on YouTube were better than the lecturers at my university. So that, and that's a free resource, right? And another one is YouTube. A lot of my days spent on YouTube or just using Google, because as an investor, I have to find out what companies do and have to research management and learn these core competencies to understand industries. The easiest way to do that is just go on YouTube and go like, what is, or subject explained, and it comes up, and it's such an easy way to learn something. And just circling back to the side hustle, I did a bit of undergraduate study in technology, but I didn't know how to build websites and that from my course. I actually took it upon myself to go out and to watch tutorials online and do all of that via YouTube, listening to podcasts, reading blogs, etc. And those are some of the soft skills that you develop. Like, people always come to me and they say, I'm a finance person, or I'm thinking of getting in, I want to write a blog, but I have no idea how to build a blog. Easiest way, go to YouTube and just find out. I would consider that part of that hour of investing in yourself, because that's a skill you're going to learn. It won't show up on your CV necessarily, but it's a really good one. What about in terms of employment? Like, when people are thinking about their careers and they want to become obviously valuable to their employer, should people generalize, or do you think adding some special skills in there?
Yeah, I think specializing and even making yourself a more niche individual. So maybe you're working in customer relations at a company, but then you develop skills on the side in terms of creating content or sales, and then you can start branching out in your company, because often companies want to continue to employ their current employees and advance you, and they're happy to work with you. So if you're putting in time on the side to learn another skill set, the company's happy usually to work with you to branch out to other areas. So putting in work on the side is often a good way for you to change direction or build more skill sets in your current company and improve your job.
It's just coincidence, but I was listening to something that Charlie Munger, who is Warren Buffett's sidekick at Berkshire Hathaway, if you like, he was talking about specializing in certain fields, and he said, you don't want to go to a doctor who's half proctologist and half dentist. And it's true, right? Like, you wanted to go to the doctor because you want to get the right answer to the right question. And it's the same way you should think about your position and your skill set. Provided it's not something that maybe is going to be made redundant, which we'll talk about in a minute. But
Yeah, you want to be the person at your company that everyone
goes to.
If it's a question about XYZ topic, everyone knows that you are the person to go to. Mm. You're the expert. You can answer any question. And that makes you really valuable.
Absolutely, it does. And just also, so there's that. And then there's also being aware of what's going on in the business itself. So what are the needs of the business?
Mm.
Where are the growth areas? Where are the areas that there might be a shortfall in labor or what have you?
Yeah.
Recognizing that and thinking to yourself, well, maybe I can go over there and learn a new skill and make myself even more valuable to the business because I bring this technical knowledge and I combine it with that technical knowledge or this general knowledge, and that's just, that combination is really important.
And often I think going niche in maybe a couple of areas, but then broadly understanding the surrounding topics and skills really helps as well, because if you get thrown into the deep end because someone's away, you can pick up what they're doing and things like that. But you still are valuable in your particular area of expertise.
Mm. And we talked about this a little bit in the last podcast, but it also helps with, let's be real, it helps with promotions, getting into jobs or roles that are much more lucrative.
Yeah.
You can even become a career changer if you've got a particular skill set. You can maybe transform that and take it to another industry, another company, and that's, you know, for people that are really career-minded, changing roles is often a way to get up. Yeah. So you may not be going straight up, like vertically.
Sometimes
up.
You have to zigzag across different companies and different roles.
And that's ultimately how you end up as the, you know, in the executive branch, if you like.
Hmm.
So that's definitely something to keep in mind. And it's just all the while keeping yourself as valuable as possible.
Yeah, and if you want to change career directions but you can't quit your day job because you need your income, building up a skill set on the side, building a portfolio of work in that area and the relevant skills, and then you can bring that to the table and you don't have to stop working or go off and do a full-time course.
Mm. Yeah, I and just for career starters, because there's probably people listening to this that probably haven't made their way into an industry yet. You hear these things all the time where there's a graduate position or what have you, and they say you need experience or you need these certain qualifications, but there could be 1,000 people that meet that criteria and you don't. So you've got to stand out somehow. So maybe it might seem silly, but maybe just mentioning that you have this other skill set, recognizing what the business does and then highlighting that is really important.
And that can sometimes make you stand out from the crowd.
For sure, yeah, because that's, you know, you're going to be a problem solver when you go into a business, and if you can bring some sort of skill set that might be valuable to them, you don't know what that is necessarily, just mention it. It's a really good one.
And for most jobs, apart from some of the niche ones, they care more about your problem solving and your ability to get things done and innovate rather than that specific knowledge, so that you know those hard facts. There are some jobs like air traffic control where you need to know the hard facts.
As you'd know.
But a lot of jobs, especially in the finance industry, they're looking for your ability to solve problems and work with clients and things like that rather than you know X, Y, Z, because the employer knows you can pick up most of that on the job.
Mm, that's true. Okay, so one of the things we wanted to talk about, I think, is talking about HECS and student loans. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I've got to say, I think you're the expert of the two of us. I know a little bit.
Well,
but
I thought that was quite relevant, especially for our audience. And I'm currently in the last year of my undergraduate degree. So I'm doing that online, but still costs the same, sadly. You miss out on so much, but still costs the same. But the great thing, I guess, with our Australian system compared to some other systems like
the US,
which is scary, and I'm glad I'm not there, is the government has a system where you don't have to pay upfront for the loan and you don't have to go to Loan Shark to get a loan. It's a government loan system. What's it, the Higher Education Contribution Scheme?
HECS.
Yes.
That's how I know it.
Yeah, and I think that's for public universities, and for private universities you can get a HELP loan, which is a similar thing.
Okay.
No, it's fee help. There we go.
Fee
help. And so most unis for undergrad, you can get a Commonwealth supported place. So that's a little bit, it's different to HECS as in it's a subsidized place. So it's a cheaper place and then you get HECS. But you might, there are unis that offer full fee places So you're paying a full fee, but you can still get HECS. So
right.
A lot of undergrads you'll see on their website, whether it's a full fee place or a Commonwealth supported place.
So that effectively, the Commonwealth supported place is effectively like, if it was just, for example, $10,000 a year, a Commonwealth supported place might be $5,000. So the other $5,000 doesn't go onto your student debt.
No.
It's kind of, that's covered by the government.
Subsidized, supported. Yeah, right, okay. And then, so you get your Commonwealth supported place and then you can get HECS.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not a Commonwealth supported place, you can still get HECS in most cases.
Okay. And when do you repay it?
So once you sort of sign up for HECS throughout the uni, as you accept your offer and enroll for your subjects, it's kind of an online form built in.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it very simple to pay for it all. You don't have to exchange money at all. And then you start paying for it later on. So this actually changes quite a lot. They change the salary rates at which your HECS is taken out. But they essentially, once you start working in a full-time job, the government will take extra money out of your tax to pay for your HECS debt.
Okay, so once you reach a certain level of income, then a percentage starts to come out.
Mm.
But is it, maybe this is too technical, but I can't remember if it's a percentage of the entire amount of your wage or if it's just like that little bracket, like the tax bracket. I think it's the entire amount, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
So like if you hit, as soon as you hit that band, then the that extra tax is applied to everything.
Mm.
And that's why when you hand, when you go to an employer and you have like a tax file declaration number, a TFN declaration.
Yeah. You've got to tick.
There's a box that says fee help.
Yeah.
And you need to tick that if you have been to university and you've used fee help. Not everyone has used fee help. There's some people get,
you know, scholarships. And there's a few different loan schemes and a few different boxes. So it's just worth checking with your HR and ticking the right box. Because if you don't tick it and the employer isn't taking extra tax out, you're going to have a bit of a tax bill when you get to the end of financial year.
Okay.
So it is a lot easier if it's taken out on a monthly, fortnightly basis.
Okay.
I had a friend recently who got the bill at tax time because she didn't know the employer wasn't taking out her HECS.
Right. Okay. Yeah. We'll definitely double check that. The question that I always get is, should I pay it back? And that's like what they're asking is, should I take money from my own pocket and pay off my student debt?
Yeah. So once you've graduated uni, aggressively trying to pay down your student loan.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Australia, it's not really worth it. I mean, if you've got the spare 40K, then go ahead. But it is probably the best debt you're ever going to get in terms of it's only going up. It's indexed every year. And I think in 2018, it was 1.9%. So in terms of,
so if you compare that to a mortgage, which is probably the cheapest form outside of student debt, that's like, that's still like in 2019, it's like 4%.
Yeah.
So,
and your HECS debt's probably a lot smaller than your mortgage.
Mm.
It might be 30 grand or something like that. Yeah. So it's,
so the last thing you want to do is use a credit card to pay off your HECS debt.
Yes.
It's like reverse compounding.
Yeah. You definitely don't want to get into financial strife to pay off your HECS debt.
Yeah.
It's, the government doesn't rush you. They let you pay it off over your whole career. Sometimes there's, I met some teachers in their 40s that were still paying off HECS debt. So it's just something. If you're not working, you're not paying it. So
actually, that's funny because the government actually brought down the level of income that you have to hit before you start paying it back. That's because they were finding that some people would never repay their HECS debt because they would get a job that wasn't necessarily the highest paid in the industry, so they'd never hit that threshold. Or if they did, they might do that and then they might be stay-at-home parents and they never go back
to
work.
They don't do a credit check for giving you this the HECS debt. It's all just done through the uni system and I think all you need is your tax file number down and there you go.
Yeah, unis are happy
and
to accept.
I think you're allowed up to 104,000, I think, when I last looked.
Right.
In terms of total. So you can stack a couple of bachelor degrees together there.
I have. Mm. Well, not bachelor's, but I did three. Yeah and I wouldn't even know what my HECS debt is, but I've got a fair bit of it. I should probably know. And you can check it.
Yes.
By going to the MyGov website, which is the one where you can see your tax returns from the past few years.
Medicare's
Do your Medicare, your super's there.
Centrelink, everything's sort of like their big portal. But
I think
It is kind of difficult to use, I found.
Yeah, it is a bit clunky, but once you get it set up, I found the hardest bit was getting it set up, and then you can do everything. Like you can swap super funds, you can do a you can
and
see,
you can
literally
find all
see
your lost
your tax
super there.
And, yep, you can find lost super. You can get the rebates for Medicare if you need to.
Yeah.
Really good thing to set up, and let's just hope it's secure because it stores like everything.
Yeah, and your health records now too.
Yeah.
So definitely as a uni student, I'd be setting up your MyGov website early on so you can track everything.
Mm.
The Hexset isn't up. I think it's updated maybe quarterly, but it's good to keep an eye on it, especially as you're studying, that you haven't mistakenly been charged for an extra unit.
Very important.
And a good thing to note is it's only been sort of recently put in, but if you're moving overseas, so if you're going for a year to work in a pub in London, you actually need to declare to the ATO via the MyGov login that you're leaving the country for six. So if it's more than 6 months, you've actually got to let them know.
Huh.
And if you start earning
pub
over
in London.
That... Yeah. Well,
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Oh, I like it.
You might not be earning, if you're at a pub in London, you might not be earning over the minimum threshold to pay back your HEX. But if you do start earning over the minimum threshold, which you should check before you go on your trip, you actually will have to pay back an appropriate amount in your tax return.
So you're saying that even if you didn't earn the money in Australia, like if you're working in a really good pub in London, for example, and you're getting $100,000,
you're going to hit the appropriate amount in your... So this is, I think this is brought in recently because a lot of people were just skipping the country and not paying...
See you later, Australia.
Not paying their HEX debt back, and I don't think the government had a way to enforce it, but now they're actually bringing in rules about
that's,
that.
That's interesting because while you're at it, you may as well talk to your accountant because if you do go overseas, you wouldn't know... what your tax residency is.
Yeah.
Because if you're overseas for more than 183 days, you might want to just ask your accountant if there's something that you need to take notice of. That's interesting. I did not know that. There you go. You learned something new.
Yeah. I think Melissa Brown actually wrote about it in the Sydney Morning Herald last year, and that was the first time I'd heard about it. So then I investigated a bit further because I'm hoping one day to go overseas for a little while.
Hmm, cool. And Melissa Brown, good follow on all the social portals. She was also on the Investors podcast that I run. Oh. She's a very nice lady.
Mm.
Okay, so last little thing that we wanted to tie off on the end here is the future of work. And this is something that gets brought up when you talk about automation and you talk about artificial intelligence and all these things that people seem to bring up, these buzzwords, and everyone's like, oh, what is it going to do to my job? And
Are we all just going to be sitting at home watching Netflix while the robots run around and cook and clean and run the world?
Universal income, etc. So will a robot take my job? Kate, throw it over to you.
There's certainly jobs that will be taken over by robots. I mean, I look at the stuff I do day to day at work and there's certainly things that I could automate.
Happily automate.
Yep. but I think my focus is, as quite a new employee, is building that additional skill set. So bringing something to the table that a robot couldn't do.
Mm.
Something with innovation and creativity and things like content. I think I've been working on some content for work and sales and various things that maybe a robot can't do.
Mm.
Or not do as well as a human.
I think there's a saying that anything that can be automated will be automated.
Mm.
And that's true. Like you can see that in any walk of your life, I guess, whether it's your professional life or your social life, you can see things that are automated. There's typically like there's two camps on this. There's people that understand technology and they're kind of like really enterprising and they're out there, the go-getters, and like, yeah, I love technology. I love the changes bring. And then there's the people who are on the other side of the table are kind of like, oh, I don't really want to go to work, go back to uni. I don't want to study. I don't want to do all this stuff. And it's
true.
I mean,
that's okay if you're in your 70s or 80s right now.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. That's probably a good thing, automation, because it will help with things like, let's throw a crazy example out there. So with machine learning and artificial intelligence, imagine the machine performs the surgery on you at 99.99% accuracy, whereas a surgeon might only get 80%.
Mm.
There's those two camps, right? Mm. And it does, in some respects, look like it's going to hurt people that work in blue-collar jobs or like unskilled jobs.
Like and there's a growing amount of jobs, but they're in that higher skilled area.
Yeah, and then you end up with what we call underemployment, which is where people who could otherwise work a full-time job in a you know, a meaningful career, if you like. They might end up with contract work because the full hours, the full hours aren't required. But I just want to add one thing, and or actually, I add two things. The first is that if you go back in time and you think about, say, agriculture used to be like the biggest employment area industry in the country, right? And then you think about tractors and all the rest of it. You know, they when people moved away from horses towards tractors, they didn't have to stand on the rotary hoe at the back. People were like up in arms, like, well, what's going to happen to my job and all this sort of stuff. But then you think about all the jobs that having tractors has created and how much more efficient the world is and et cetera. Like, there's opportunity that comes with change. So we've talked this whole podcast about investing in yourself. If you're in, if you're doing that, if you're actively investing in yourself, this will be it's you know business as usual for you. In fact, it's probably exciting. So look forward to that.
Embracing the future, not being scared of the changes to come.
Yep. And the other way I would say to be more optimistic about it is try to own shares in the companies that create these, you know, new automated devices or machine learning. There's plenty in Australia that you can choose from. There's ETFs that invest only in robotics, for example. You don't have to sit idly by and just complain about the world becoming automated. You can actually go out and
be a part of it.
Yeah, you can own it. Like, let's just use an example. This is not a company that I own, but IBM have created this computer called Watson, which is effectively like this super computer that can do AI or artificial intelligence. You can own shares in IBM if you really want to. There's no one to say you can't do that. So, you know, it depends what side of the table you choose to sit on, and but the choice is yours. So that's an interesting thing that I thought would add some comfort to some people. There's definitely opportunity no matter what side of the table you're on.
Yeah. I think an interesting one is with the Mikey system and the trains.
Victorian train system. Yep.
Like, the trams used to have a conductor on board who would help everyone on and make sure that everyone's tickets were stamped. But there's still people at the gates, at Mikey gates. There's heaps of inspectors there. There's police at every station. So I think almost employment's probably increased in the public transport sector.
And that's right. Like, for all intents and purposes, the technology has actually made the world a profoundly better place. It's made it safer. It's made it more efficient.
And then we're record low unemployment. So technology hasn't wiped out all the jobs yet.
Maybe when we ebb and flow through the market cycle, to put some jargon in there, we might find that there's a few more disgruntled employees or redundancies going on. But yeah, I mean, that's another really good example of, you know, change can create opportunity. So just try and make sure you're prepared for it now. Make sure you're on the right side of the trend when it comes. So you've put in some of the ideas in the talking points here, and you've said that obviously preparing yourself financially. So we've talked about emergency funds, having all these things in place. Will help you if you do need to transition.
Yeah, and just take building a buffer up. So that's the most important thing, I guess, having your emergency fund. So you've got a buffer if your job does get taken by a robot.
And if you're further down the line and you already have an investment portfolio, you might have some type of passive income coming in from your investments. It's not ideal to rely on them before you have to, but if you have some money put away, you might have you know, a fair chunk in term deposits or some dividend paying shares or investment property. Those things can provide some support when times get a little tough. Anything else we want to cover off on that?
I thought one interesting point is that the government does actually publish lists of the job shortage reports and things like that. And there's lots of industries that publish the upcoming sort of in the next 10 years, we expect this field or this profession will grow by 20%. So if you're looking for some ideas, it's worth checking out those. I'll try and find some links and put them in the show notes.
That's a really good point. It's like, again, just being on the right side of that trend. And I think personally, my personal belief is that if you are, in particular, this is applicable to young people, if you are in any of the STEM degrees or like that's your field. So when I say STEM, I mean sciences. So science, technology.
Some people have adjusted it to STEAM now, putting arts in there.
That's probably a counterpoint
To move it all together.
Yeah, the creative side is you can't replicate that, right? But mathematics, all those things are not changing. You know, you meet actuarial scientists, for example, the modern day mathematician, if you like. They use more computers now than they ever have, but they're still the same, still fulfilled the same role. They've just made it easier on themselves. But if you can build that core body of knowledge, going back to that, and build upon that over time, I don't see a problem reason to worry about the robots.
Mm. And just don't forget to invest in yourself with your time and sometimes your money.
Yep, as we will say time and time again. Cool. All right. We'll end by saying, please send us your questions if you've got any.
Yes, we'll have a Q&A episode coming up very soon.
Mm-hmm. And Kate, where can our listeners find out more about you?
I'm available on Twitter and Instagram at HowToMoneyAUS and www.howtomoney.online.
And you can find me at Owen Rask on Twitter and on the www.raskfinance.com website, where you can also see the show notes and lodge a question. Cool.
The future is out there.
Oh, here it is. Way to sign off.
Up reference in there.